Welcome to the second part of this American Cassette Ministries special presentation featuring Clifford Goldstein, editor of Shabbat Shalom magazine and author of three best-selling books entitled The Saving of America, 1844 Made Simple, and his personal testimony appropriately entitled Best Seller. Now let's join Clifford Goldstein once again as he shares more practical ways we can witness to our Jewish friends.
What I'd like to do now for a little while is talk to you about some of the material that we have, some of the printed material, whatever that we have for Jewish people. I'm hopeful that what we've gone over already, again, it's just a rough outline, but hope that it's given you just a basic idea of how Jewish people think, why they have some of the attitudes they have, and we'll, again, there's always so much more to go into, and if you do get a chance to do some reading from Jewish literature and some of those things, I think it will help you in understanding the Jewish mind. Well, anyway, what I'd like to deal with now is, well, of course, the first thing I'd like to talk to you about is Shabbat Shalom. Shabbat Shalom, Sabbath peace. It used to be called the Israelite. For about 30 years, there was a magazine out called the Israelite. Maybe some of you have seen it, a little magazine that was started about the year I was born for reaching Jewish people. And it had some very good material in there. And for a while it was going quite well. And then they couldn't get an editor for it. And they had a retired minister, Robert Odom, who edited the thing for many years. And yet he was retired when he took the job. And he had been editing it for many, many years. Matter of fact, when I first got this job about 5-6 years ago, I flew out to his house in Arkansas, and I walked into his house, and this old man, he looks at me and says, "I have been praying for you for 20 years. Because he wanted out for 20 years. And when we first took it over, we changed the name to the New Israelite. And then eventually we went to Shabbat Shalom, Sabbath Peace, which, to the grace of God, I believe this is a name that we'll keep and till the second coming. Now, Shabbat Shalom, this is basically the church's outreach magazine to the Jewish people. And I'll make sure every one of you get a copy here, and we're going to put this into the packet. And this is really kind of like the way you have Message for blacks, or you have another magazine for another group, or what. This is geared specifically towards the Jews. Now, Shabbat Shalom, my basic tact or my basic approach with Shabbat Shalom is to put in articles on topics which I know that the Jews are interested in. And then as much as possible, in a way not to offend them, to give them bits and pieces and principles of our message, of our truth. Now, I don't have any illusions that a 16-page quarterly magazine is going to do the Jewish work. It'd be nice if it would, but it's not going to, it hasn't, and it won't. But it's just a tool. It's a tool for you to use with your Jewish friends. But now the question is, how do you use Shabbat Shalom? How can you use it? Because you can misuse this magazine. You can misuse it, and it can even backfire on you. Well, the first thing, if you want to subscribe to Shabbat Shalom, inside the back cover, inside the back page, it just tells you the subscription information in the back there. It's only $4.95 a year, which is cheap, but it's a small magazine. But at this point, financially, this is, you know, all we can do. And the Lord has blessed in the past number of years, because we had, well, when I took over the Israelite after about 30 years, there was maybe 300 subs. Now, right now, we're sending out about 8,000 subscriptions. Now, not all of them are people who have just subscribed for it. A lot of them are, we get donations and we subscribe for other people. But whatever it is, the Jews are reading Shabbat Shalom. I get stories, very encouraging stories, for years now, from all over different parts of the world about people using the magazine. I mean, we've got requests recently for the magazine in Australia. I was in England last year, talking about the Jewish work over there, and we're sending it over there to England, and they're using it over there in England. We've got a request from South America. We're sending them down to South America now. Gotten requests from India. I even got a letter a few weeks ago from the Soviet Union. Now that things are opening up in Russia, they wanted copies of Shabbat Shalom in the Soviet Union to translate. I got a letter a few months ago from a pastor in France who had seen Shabbat Shalom, was very interested. He wanted to base a magazine like Shabbat Shalom, get one started in France, and he wanted permission to, he wanted all the back issues of Shabbat Shalom to permission to translate and reprint the articles in a magazine in France for the work for the Jews. So, and again, and you know, we're still only a drop in the bucket, but still the Lord has been blessing. I mean, the magazine is being read. I'd like to read you. Here's a letter that came to our office in December, last December, and it's from Temple Emek Shalom. And it says the following. It says, I am the vice president of Temple Emek Shalom, a Jewish community in Southern Oregon. We receive your publication Shabbat Shalom, because what it is, I have a mailing list of a lot of Jewish synagogues, and I just send them the magazine. We receive your publication Shabbat Shalom and are very pleased with the positive and informative nature of your ministry. Your attitude about Jewish people and our faith should set the example for all Christian outreach ministries to the Jewish people. Obviously, you are sharing your living gospels with us, and this is fine, even if we agree to disagree. But what makes your publication so edifying is the respect with which you approach issues which concern Jews, anti-Semitism, Torah interpretation, and our relation to the church. This year, our congregation is without a rabbi, and you might wish to take Rabbi Marvin Schwab's name off your database. You can replace it with mine. In the meantime, he says, is it possible for you to send me all your past issues of the magazine? Please send it to my attention and forward the invoice for whatever charge there might be. I would like to use them in some of my adult education programs. So that was one of the more positive letters. Now, admittedly, they're not all so positive. You can guess. I got a letter one time from someone. He said, may God destroy all the Hitlers and the Haymans and the Goldsteins off the face of the earth. So he was a little more upset about it. But the point is, this helped me confirm to me that we're taking the right approach. We're putting things, because I'm a Jew, I know what the Jews are thinking about. I know where they're coming from. I know what they like. I know what they don't like. I know what they want to hear. I know what they don't want to hear. So this was very encouraging to me. Let me know that, hey, this is the right approach. And here's another letter I got from some Adventists, from the Adventist Information Center in New York City. Here's one. Thank you so much for remembering to send supplies of Shabbat Shalom. The latest issue with the fingerprints of God arrived last Monday. Then she says, my Jewish friend Harold Ehrlich, who has been taking literature and buying books and visiting here for about 4 years, was happy to receive this new issue. When Harold came yesterday to the Thursday Bible study, he told me that he thought this latest Shabbat Shalom was, quote, fantastic, the best yet, and that he was so excited about it that he Xeroxed your article, The Fingerprints of God, making 50 copies to hand out to what he said were, quote, his atheist friends. And then she went on saying, so this is some of the positive responses we're getting back. Now, as I said, not everybody is always so positive, but I've been getting stories from just people telling me in the vans in New York City. We have the vans on up New York City, and my friends up there working there say the Jews come in and take it up. My one friend told me even the ultra-Orthodox Jews in full dress regalia, black hats, black coats, the whole spiel, they come on the vans and they look at it and they kind of fold it up and slip it underneath their arms and walk out with it. All I can say is praise the Lord. That is so encouraging to me. My friends in New York say they give them out in New York. They can't give them out fast enough in the streets of New York City. So whatever it is, the Jews are reading the magazine. But again, though, this doesn't mean that no matter any Jewish friend you have, you just run up and you give them Shabbat Shalom. Because there are some people who you waste your time if you give Shabbat Shalom to. If you have a Jewish friend and you try to talk to him and he's angry and he's hostile and doesn't want anything to do with it, then save your $4.95. You know, go out and buy food or something instead, because you're wasting your time. But if you have a Jewish friend or someone who's at least somewhat open, like maybe like this person in the synagogue, he obviously is not a believer, and he obviously doesn't believe in Jesus, but he obviously is someone that's willing to listen. You know, it doesn't mean we could agree to disagree. If you have a friend who's that way, then I'd say Shabbat Shalom would be perfect for them. Even if they don't agree with it, they might not be hostile to it. Now, what I suggest for people, what I tell them is, first of all, if you're interested in working for Jews, you ought to get Shabbat Shalom yourself. At $4.95 a year, you're not going to go broke getting it. And what you can do is, if you read between the lines, you can understand the approaches that we're trying to do in Shabbat Shalom. And I'm going to go through a few magazines to give you some of the ideas. And you might have a Jewish friend, you might decide, well, he's not really ready for the magazine at all. But you know, there was an, like, for example, this latest issue's got an article, The New Testament and the Jews. And this deals with the question, many Jews believe the New Testament is anti-Semitic. And I don't believe it's anti-Semitic. So I take the approach in the article that if you were to take the criteria by which you use to say the New Testament is anti-Semitic, that's fine. But if you apply that same criteria to the Old Testament, you'd have to say that the Old Testament is more anti-Semitic than the New Testament, because you've got more of the same kind of stuff in the Old Testament than you have in the New Testament. Then, of course, you go through and you say it's not anti-Semitic, it's just dealing with the spiritual problems of God's people at that time. Now, anyway, the point is, you might not feel like your friend is ready for Shabbat Shalom. But maybe your friend said, well, the New Testament is anti-Semitic. Well, you could have learned from reading this article on your own, and you take the arguments yourself to the person and say, yeah, but what about this here? What about that here? In other words, what I'm saying is you can learn from Shabbat Shalom by seeing the approaches that we take in here. You can take that approach and you can use that approach with your Jewish friends without ever giving them the magazine. In other words, this can be a tool to teach you to learn. And if you want more back issues of Shabbat Shalom, because we've got some articles on, you know, I've been doing this now for about 6 years, so we've covered all sorts of material. And we could send you back issues and so forth, and you can study it yourself, and you could learn yourself approaches to take with your Jewish friends if you don't quite feel that they are ready yet for any kind of literature. Or you might decide, you might have a Jewish friend, and you might decide, well, I'm not really sure he's ready for Shabbat Shalom yet, but you might want to Xerox an article and take a specific article out of the magazine and give them the article. Say, hey, I got this from a magazine, I thought you might be interested in it. And if they're positive about the article, you might say, well, would you like to get the whole magazine? And because what we do in Shabbat Shalom is, we're like, for example, this latest Shabbat Shalom, generally I like to put an article sometimes on religious liberty. The first article is Why I Find Religious Toleration Intolerable. And this is a secular article dealing with religious liberty. This is a very important, as I said earlier, the Jews are very interested in religious liberty. They're very afraid of what's happening in the country with the new Christian right and the church and so on. And considering their experience with churches in the past when the church had political power, it's easy to understand why. But here's what I try to do is often put in a very neutral article right in the beginning on no religion, no preaching, just on something which I know the Jews are interested in. Okay, then you might want to Xerox that article and give it to them. Then I go in and give them some more theological pieces. I mean, this latest issue, I start out with this article on religious toleration. Then we have an article here, The New Testament and the Jews. This is dealing with the question of anti-Semitism in the New Testament. Then I have an article here, Seal of Approval. This is just pure archaeology. This is pure archaeology showing how some seals that they found help prove the validity of the Bible, because you might be surprised that many Jews you're going to meet don't believe in the Bible. They're evolutionists. They're atheists. They're agnostics. And this is here to try to help give them confidence. So you can't bring somebody to Jesus if they don't believe in Moses. See what I'm saying? You've got to get them to believe in Moses and in the Bible first. Then we have another article in this issue called Errors in the Bible and the Mistakes We Make About Them. And what this deals with is sometimes a Jewish person will go to a synagogue. Say he's been talking to a Christian and the Christian's been putting some questions in his mind, and he'll go to his rabbi and say, Rabbi, well, what about the New Testament? What about some of these things in the New Testament? And the rabbi will say, look, this can't be the inspired word of God, because he'll go in and he'll show him a few little discrepancies, okay, in the New Testament, whether order or whatever or something. And he'll say, well, obviously then this can't be the word of God because there's supposedly mistakes in here. But what I do in this article is show, hey, if you want to find mistakes, you'll find more in the Old Testament than in the New Testament. That doesn't invalidate it as the Word of God. And then it was an opportunity to explain how inspiration works, to explain that the Bible is not verbally inspired, that it's not like the prophets just took dictation, but that the thoughts were inspired, and the prophets wrote these words down in the old human language with all the fallibility of human language and, you know, human fallibility and so on. And this was in a way just to show them how inspiration works, because many of them might see discrepancies in the Old Testament. I mean, right now I'm taking graduate studies in the Hebrew Bible from people that don't even believe the Bible is reliable history, much less inspired. And I mean, if I was a verbal inspirationist, my first day I would have been blown away. Because, you know, scribal errors and translation and so on and so forth. But when you understand how inspiration works, it doesn't bother me at all. But see, I understand how inspiration works. Many Jewish people don't. It's like many even Adventists, it's all or nothing. So this was a way to try to show them, hey, inspiration doesn't mean verbal inspiration. The thoughts are inspired. So if you got a little discrepancy here and there, it doesn't invalidate the Bible as the Word of God. So not only can this help them with the New Testament, but it would help them with the Old Testament. Because if you come in and someone shows you discrepancies, how could this be the Word of God? So the idea is to try to get them to believe in the Bible, period. You get them into the Old Testament first, that's great. And then oftentimes I run articles in here by Ellen White, and just selected articles by her. Now this one, I happen to run it word for word, the test of faith. This was a story of Abraham and Isaac, because there was nothing in here that was offensive. But a lot of times when I run some of her stuff, I have to change the writing. And as soon as I change the writing, I change the name. I put the name Irving White on there for Ellen White. And the White Estate told me, you can do it, but they wanted me to just let them see the articles first, and they wanted me to say this is a pseudonym and so forth. Because Ellen White does have a beautiful spirit. There's a beautiful spirit there, and that's just a different from any of the other articles. So, I mean, you can adulterate her and change her, and she'd be great for the Jews, but you just can't give them straight Ellen White. Well, anyway, but the point is, you can take a Shabbat Shalom, you can go through it, you might decide, hey, this is not really, my friend's not ready for this yet. You can give them articles, or you can read it yourself, and then, you know, use some of the ideas yourself, this is something where, again, you just have to pray about it. You've got to feel them out, and just, you know, take it step at a time. But this is geared here specifically for Jewish people. And real quickly, just some of the past Shabbat Shaloms. Here's one, The Prophet and the Popes. This was the cover article. In this issue, I've got, again, a secular article, War Between Jews. This was just telling about the fighting between the ultra-Orthodox Jews and the secular Jews in Jerusalem. Again, no heavy religion, nothing like that. This is a topic that the Jews are interested in. Then we go through that article, The Prophet and the Popes, Daniel on the Roman Catholic Church. And it was a study of Daniel 7 through the Bible. Just a study on Daniel 7, which I know that for many Jews, this is very interesting to them. And someone told me, as a matter of fact, the Adventist Information Center, she said a Jewish person came in one time, read this issue, and was amazed at our understanding of prophecy. And it really made an impact on them. And he shall think to change times and laws. When you study Daniel 7, the little horn will change times and laws. Well, here's nothing but just quotes. Well, here, I said, did you ever wonder why Christians go to church on Sunday instead of Saturday? Though your Baptist friend will talk about the Lord's Day, the resurrection of Jesus, the new covenant, and the belief that he is under grace, not law, the real reason is that the Roman Catholic Church institutionalized a change within Christendom more than 1,000 years ago. Below are a few quotes from Catholic sources that explain why Christians, many of them whom won't elect the Pope dog catcher, nevertheless worship on his holy day. You know, so again, as I say, I'm trying to get them our message. This is Adventism. This is our message, but a way that will not offend them. And I use a lot of their sources. Here's an article, The False Sabbath, and so forth. So again, and here's one that, this was very exciting. This article, The Religious Right and the Destruction of Israel, was run in Liberty. Now, for a number of years, I have been getting the Baltimore Jewish Times. It's the largest Jewish weekly in the country. For 5 years, I've been getting the Baltimore Jewish Times. Read it religiously. Every week I get it. And I sat down one day in my office to read it, and I'm flipping through, and there was this article. They picked it up from Liberty and reprinted it in the Baltimore Jewish Times. So this showed me that, hey, this is the right track. Because, you know, we had this on the cover of Shabbat Shalom, but the Jews were interested in it so much that they ran that in their own publication. So again, you know, here's an article talks about, we have some religious things in here. This issue was dealing a lot with religious liberty and the new right, and I dealt with that because I know that the Jews are very uptight about the new right. And I wanted them to show, hey, we see that they're dangerous as well. We take the same view of them that you do. We see that, again, I'm trying to establish bonds with them. Let them see that, hey, we take the same positions. And one last one, this issue I wanted to show you. This issue deals with false messiahs. And this, again, we start out with a very simple article about religious liberty, something benign, and we go through this issue, article here called False Messiahs. It shows all through history how the Jews have been duped by false messiahs. Century after century, one false messiah after another came up and duped a lot of the Jews. And they ended the article by saying, no doubt lessons have been learned from these false movements, but they raise questions too. And perhaps the most important one is, if so many Jews, even scholars and rabbis, could have been wrong about the identity of the Messiah before, could they be wrong about him now too? See, what I do is, and sometimes I get flack from Adventists, because Adventists get Shabbat Shalom, and they don't see Jesus. They don't see me preaching Jesus in there. And I've got some pretty sharp letters from Adventists, because they don't understand. We can't do that. See, I do not proselytize openly in this magazine. Matter of fact, one time there was an article in a Jewish magazine about different proselytizing magazines, and they went and they listed it all, and when they came to Shabbat Shalom, they said, we don't know yet if this is a proselytizing magazine or not. Because we don't proselytize. What we do is that I bring them right. Matter of fact, when this issue came out, some Jewish magazine was writing about this, and they called me up, and they said, well, why don't you come out on this issue, come right out and just say it's Jesus? And I said, well, I'm not saying it's obvious to me it's Jesus, but I'm letting you draw your own conclusions. And that's what it is, because I like to bring them to where it's right up to the point where it should be so obvious who it is, but then I don't say it. And let them come to the conclusion. And again, some people attack me for it, and they think I need to be more open and preaching in it, whatever, but just, you know, it's just not the way we do it. And here, one last issue here I wanted to show you. Here's an article here called The Son of David, to give you an example of the approach. And in it, I quote a number of Jewish sources which says the Messiah must come from the house of David. And I show that the Jews believe that. But then I say, the temple was destroyed in 70 AD. All the genealogies were destroyed in the temple when it was destroyed. And I said, though this situation presents a difficult task for those who want to check the lineage of someone making messianic claims, had records been kept, then perhaps the Jews of previous centuries would not have been duped by the various false messiahs who appeared across the centuries, often leaving disappointment, suffering, even death in their wake. Apparently, the only time someone making messianic claims could truly have his lineage validated would have been prior to the loss of all the genealogies, which occurred in 1st century B.C., A.D., with the siege of Jerusalem, the burning of the temple, and the end of ancient Israel as a nation. So see the point I'm trying to make? Saying if somebody comes along now and claims they're the Messiah, how can you know that he's the Messiah? How can you check his lineage? Because after the temple was destroyed, all the records have been broken. So the only way you could have known for sure someone being the Messiah is had it occurred before the temple was destroyed. And again, I just leave it at that. And we don't take it any further. Well, anyway, this is just a few of many, many different approaches that we have. Now, the other thing with Shabbat Shalom, so again, with Shabbat Shalom, I highly recommend you get it for yourself. Again, you can get subscription information in the back of the magazine. You can read it yourself. You can share it with your Jewish friends. You have to give them articles. Depends on the situation. You're going to have to pray your way through that yourself and decide which is the best approach to give. Now, on the back of each magazine, Moses Health Laws, Vindicated by Modern Science. This is a beginning of a Bible study course made specifically for the Jews. Specific Bible study course. And I have some of the cards here, and we might include these in the packets when we get out. This is a Bible course that was made many, many years ago, geared specifically for Jewish people. Now, it's an old course, and I'm not as thrilled with the way it looks now, because it was made like in the 50s, and it looks like it was made in the 50s. Nevertheless, it's filled with a lot of very good information. And what I would suggest to anybody who's very serious about working for the Jews, that you get the Bible study course and take it yourself. And even if you're not, if your Jewish friend isn't ready to do it, you can learn an awful lot. We have Gentiles take this course and get baptized. So this Bible study course was made specifically for the Jews. We advertise on the back of all the Shabbat Shaloms, and the Lord has really been blessing. This course comes out of the Co-op City Church in New York. It used to be known as Times Square Center. And then they moved out of Times Square, and there's a little congregation now. There's a few Jews left in New York, and they run the Bible study course, and they've got some other material available that we'll talk about as well. But this is a, they deal with the Bible study course, and you know, before they took the course over in New York, it was being handled out by Voice of Prophecy. And there were maybe 5 people a year took the Bible study course, 5 or 10 people. When the Lord gave me Shabbat Shalom to start editing Shabbat Shalom and sprucing it up and promoting it and so on, we started advertising this course in the back. And whereas they had an average of maybe 5 or 10 people a year taking the course, I can call up Co-op City Church, talk to Mitch Greenbaum or people there and ask them how many people are taking the course. And generally, on an average, there's anywhere from 300 to 500 people enrolled in this Bible study course. Jews, Gentiles from around the world, and baptisms have resulted from the course. So again, you can, the course is going very well now. And again, it's something that you can take yourself, or if you have a Jewish friend, they say, are you interested in taking a Bible course? You know, and then you can enroll them for the course. Again, I don't know where they're at. It all depends on the individual Jew. So right now I'd say Shabbat Shalom and the Bible study course, these are two of the main kind of little things that we have geared specifically for the Jewish people. You know, Shabbat Shalom comes out every quarter, and back issues are available that you can get if you want to write to my office at the General Conference or if you want to call me. That's funny. Sometimes people, they don't know my name, but they want to call me at the GC, and they call up the GC operator, and they say, I'm trying to find some guy, he's a Jew. And the operators know who it is, and I've had people call me, and they just call the operators and say, so if you forget my name, or you need some information. And that's the other thing, I remember, I want to let you know. I mean, my office is, I am basically it at the GC for the Jewish work. So you could see it's not top priority in anybody's mind, but I mean, I am there to try to help you with the work for the Jews. I mean, I get letters all the time from people having questions on their Jewish friends or how to approach their Jewish friends. And, you know, we have some material that I'm going to show you that we send out. But, I mean, a lot of people don't know anything about me. They don't know anything about the work. I mean, a lot of people have never even heard of Shabbat Shalom. But we're there to try to help you in doing the Jewish work. I can't do the Jewish work on my own, but I am there to try to help give our ministers, our lay people, tools to do the Jewish work. Well, that's all they can do is help give you tools, which is what we're trying to do. Now, another thing, if you're interested, there's a small little work going on in New York for Jews up there, and a number of Jewish Adventists are up there, and there's a little newsletter that they put out. And they've gotten one out so far, and I'm sure more will be coming out. And there's a little organization called Shofar, S-H-O-F-A-R, which means, you know, the trumpet. And if you're interested in getting on the newsletter, getting the newsletter Shofar, which just gives information about what's going on in the Jewish work in New York and things that are available, you can write the Shofar. It's Box 1387, Manhasset, New York, 11030. And you can get on their newsletter. And if you're interested in finding about some of the material that they have at the Co-op City Church. Co-op City Church is really, it used to be called the Hebrew Adventist Congregation. You can write to them at the Israelite Heritage Institute. Well, actually, it's the same address for the Bible study course. If you want to write to Co-op City Church and find out what they have or visit them up there or whatever, you can just write to this address here in the Bible study course. And that'll get you in touch with the group in New York, which is working to reach Jewish people. Now, when ingathering time comes, we have a special ingathering brochure made just for the Jews. It's great because every year they send me the the copy for the ingathering brochure. They say, fix this up so it won't be offensive to Jews. And they give me $150. Well, it takes me maybe an hour. The easiest $150 I ever make in my life. And I just go through and edit out some of the more objectionable things and so forth. But when you do ingathering, you could ask specifically for the Jewish ingathering brochure if you're going to be in a Jewish area. Or even if you have a Jewish friend who might someday be asking you questions about what does the church do, what is your church doing, and so on. You can give them the annual report for the ingathering, which is, it says right here in the corner, Jewish, because they print up a special one just for Jewish people. So again, you can write to my office at the General Conference, either call me or write to the office there, and you can get some of the ingathering brochures, or you can go right to Pacific Press. Pacific Press does it. You can call them or write them and say, I'd like some ingathering brochures. And this is something that you can use to show, if they ask you a question about, well, what does your church do, this and that, say, well, here, one aspect of our church is community services. And this is done in a way not to offend the Jewish people. Now, we have some other things here as we wind down a little bit. I'd like to... Here's some very interesting books. The former editor of Israelite magazine, Robert Odom, he was the one who had been editing the thing 20 years after he retired. He's not Jewish, but he's an incredible scholar. He's an incredible amount of work. A lot of articles that I have in Shabbat Shalom, I use his research. I just take his research from earlier Shabbat Shaloms. And he's written three books that are available. You can order these books through Co-op City Church, or you can write to the GC, to my office at the GC, and get these books. I believe it's $12 to get all three, and that's postage paid. Israel's Prophetic Puzzle, Israel's Preexistent Messiah, Israel's Angel Extraordinary. And these are heavy books. I mean, it's very heavy books. Odom doesn't mince words. He gets right down, and it's just, you've got literally, it's the fruits of more than 50 years of research by Odom, who's always been interested in the Jews and Jewish sources. Israel's Prophetic Puzzle, Israel's Preexistent Messiah, and Israel's Angel Extraordinary. I mean, and they're filled with hundreds and hundreds of references from Jewish sources. I mean, he's quoting the Jerusalem Talmud, the Babylonian Talmud, the Midrash, the Targums, you know, and on and on and on, all these different sources. And Israel's Prophetic Puzzle is Daniel 9, 24 through 27, using Jewish sources, year-day principle, this, that, and so on, from Jewish sources. Israel's pre-existent Messiah, or again, hundreds of references showing that the Jews believe that the Messiah was pre-existent. Israel's Angel Extraordinary, it's a study on who Michael is, and leads to the conclusion as to who Michael is. Now, again, these are heavy books, but again, if you really want to find some fascinating research material, again, this is something that you can use for yourself, for your own information. You can have material that you can use and you can share it with your Jewish friends, or you can just give them the books. Again, this is an individual decision that you have to make after prayerful, you know, meditation. Is so-and-so ready for the book, or should I just take some of the material from the book? I mean, these books are just overflowing with quotes and things. A lot of times I need quotes. I don't know how to get through the Talmud and the Midrash and the Targums, but a lot of times I find the quotes that are already he found them for me. And then I just go and look up to make sure the references are right, and I've got this material. So these are excellent, excellent books that I would recommend if you really want to do some serious study and get some insights ourselves. Again, what I'm trying to say all along is we can learn from the Jews. We can learn from Judaism. As we study about Judaism to reach our Jewish friends, you cannot but help enrich our understanding of Adventism. Now, of course, you're not going to accept everything, and some things obviously you have to reject, but we can learn a lot from the Jews, and that's important when you witness to your Jewish friends, and that you don't go in with this attitude like, I'm going to teach them. Don't go with that attitude. You know, go with the attitude, hey, maybe I can learn something, and then we can share, and I can learn some things from him, and chances are we might have a few things to tell them as well, don't you think? But anyway, these three books, you can order them through. You can write to the church in New York, or you could order them through the office at the General Conference. You can write to the Israelite Heritage Institute, which is the same name for the Bible study course, and just say you want these three books, and for $12 you can get them postpaid. Here's a book by Samuel Schrolovic Jacobson. Samuel Jacobson, when I first met Samuel Jacobson, I was amazed because Samuel Jacobson was the only person I ever met who remembers the Bolshevik Revolution. He lived through the Bolshevik Revolution. He was a little boy. Sam was raised in a religious Orthodox Jewish home. Sam eventually went to South Africa. He met a South African bricklayer. And he ended up teaching Sam about the truth about the Messiah and so forth. And Sam has been an unswavering, unshakable Adventist now for 30 some 40 years. He helped me make some of the final. When I moved to his house, I lived in his house for a while. I was a Sabbath keeper, this and that, but I was against Ellen White. I wasn't a vegetarian. And I left his house 3 months later, and I was into Ellen White. I was into vegetarianism. The Lord used Sam to help me make the few final steps into Adventism, even though, as I said, it was a Gentile who first brought me in to the message. And this is his own story about how he became an Adventist. And he's got some very, very good material in here dealing with the idea of God being one. No, that's the question. Well, was God is one and so forth? Well, the word, the famous Hebrew pair, the Shema, Shema Yisrael, Adonai Elokeinu, Adonai Echad. Echad is one. Yet that word Echad also is used, there was evening and there was morning, Yom Echad, day one. The day was composed of an evening and a morning, composed of two parts. Adam and Eve knew his wife and they became one Echad flesh. One, two parts came one way. I think he even quotes in here Maimonides, he says, blessed be the name. I believe with perfect faith that the Creator, blessed be His name, is a unity. This is a famous Jewish scholar, Maimonides. In other words, he's got a lot of very good material in here. And this book is available, I believe, at the ABCs. You can find this at the ABCs. It's been sold for many, many years. Jewish people have come into the message through this book, and it's helped people come in. So you can pick up this at any ABCs. And again, you can read it yourself, learn some things. You might want to take what you've learned and share it with your Jewish friends, or just give them the book themselves. You can read it yourself, learn some things. You might want to take what you've learned and share it with your Jewish friends, or just give them the book themselves. It has to be your choice. And I have here too, this is called Share the New Life with a Jew. And this is another one, How to Witness Simply and Effectively to the Jews. Now this is put out by Jews for Jesus. And again, you know, Jews for Jesus, they have their headquarters in San Francisco, Haight-Ashbury in San Francisco. And if you want to get some material from them, here's the address. Jews for Jesus, 60 Haight Street. Haight Street, San Francisco, California, 94102. I mean, you can get some good material from them. Share the New Life with the Jew, How to Witness Simply and Effectively to the Jews. These are some material that could help you in witnessing to Jews. Some of the material that I gave you earlier, I had gotten from reading through these books, Moish Rosen and so forth. You know, They're Baptists. There are many kinds. They're not all that friendly to Seventh-day Adventists, but they have some good material in this area which could be helpful. And I think the final thing I have here, this is available. You can write to the Israelite Heritage Institute at the GC address, 6840 Eastern Avenue. Drinking at the Sources by Jacques Ducan. Jacques Ducan is very interesting. He's a Jewish Adventist. He's an Algerian, I believe. Joined the church a number of years ago. He teaches at Andrews University Seminary. He has two PhDs. Jacques Ducan, very intelligent man. And this book is a book, an appeal to the Jew and to the Christian to note their common beginnings. And he goes back and shows that the problem, the split in Christianity between Judaism came with the Jews rejecting the Messiah and the church rejecting the law, which is really it's a battle that you still even face today to a degree. And here's again a book which you could probably even just give this to a Jewish person. I don't think there'd really be any qualm at all about giving this to a Jewish person. But again, I would recommend before you give anything to your Jewish friends, you read it yourself. Just to me, because you've learned a few more things now. I mean, if someone comes up and gives you something, piece of literature to give to your Jewish friends, and you look through it and the literature saying what a great man Martin Luther was, don't give it to your Jewish friend. See what I'm saying? Some of the things that you've learned and some of the sensitivities now that you've picked up with them, so it'd be very important to look through that. But Dukan's Drinking at the Sources, I believe, is a resource material that you can use for your Jewish friends as well and can help you. Well, I think I've pretty much covered everything I've wanted to cover at this point. I have a little thing I want to close with, but I'd like to leave it open for if any of you have any questions. We could spend a few minutes going through questions. Now, obviously, I've given you about the gamut of what we have specifically for the Jews. As you can see, the Jewish work, it is a small work. It is a small work. Unfortunately, the Adventist Church has never really been able to really get a grasp on the work and make it something major. But the church doesn't have to do it. It's individuals that can do the work. You know, whether you're a minister or a lay person, I'm sure many of you have all run into Jewish people sooner or later. You have some contact with them, especially if you're in the big cities. And again, the main thing is just be sensitive to their needs and just show them love. Don't look at them as, hey, here's a person I want to convert. Look at them and here's a person that I want to just, you know, show love to and show the love of Jesus to. Now, are there any questions on anything that we've had so far? We have a microphone here. Here, why don't you just...
Well, this is not really a question. I don't know whether it should go on the record or not. But would you do me a favor and repeat the Shema again?
Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad.
Okay. Is this because you're a Jewish Adventist? I seem to recall from my Bible that it's Yahweh Elohim.
Well, okay, the Jews don't pronounce that.
Okay,
the
so
Jews
that's
don't.
What I
you don't
wondering.
Say that word. Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, Yahweh. Okay. Those letters, mm-hmm. the Yod, the Hey, the Vav, and the Hey,
right.
are not. That's considered sacrilege.
No, what is it? The Tetra.
Yeah, yeah. That's considered sacrilege. They don't pronounce that. This is where you're getting the whole gamut of Judaism. That's not a bad question because.
So, in other words, if I were to come in contact with someone and we're talking to them about the Shema, that I would insult them. It would be sacrilege to them for me to say Yahweh.
If it was a religious Jew.
Adonai.
If it was a religious. Matter of fact, a while back on the airplane, an Orthodox Jewish boy sat down next to me,
mm-hmm.
and I just. For some reason, I wasn't thinking. And I said, how do you pronounce it? I wanted to get, you know, I heard Orthodox Jew, and how do you pronounce Yahweh? Or he said, what? And I said, and he didn't know what, he never heard it, but it's all through the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote the letters out, and he flinched. And what he did was he took it, and he folded it up, and he put it in his pocket, and he was going to put it away in a special box. Because the name is considered so sacred, mm-hmm. and so on. But again, a regular secular Jew or a conservative Jew or Reformed Jew, they're not going to care at all.
Yeah.
But again, I say when you deal with Jews, always go with the lowest common denominator. Mm-hmm. Don't ever say Yah. Always say Adonai. Always say the Lord. That way, that's a principle. Anytime you're dealing with the Jews, take the lowest common denominator. Take the safest route you can. It's better to say too little than say too much and be sorry.
Well, I wanted to clarify that because I thought that's probably what it was.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's written out with those letters.
I just wondered if maybe I was reading my Hebrew wrong.
No. That's how it's written out, but they don't pronounce it that way.
Well, that's what I thought.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions? Okay.
Your whole presentation to me makes working for the Jews and any kind of with hoping for any kind of mass success being so hopeless. The impression that I have of them is that they are terribly non-objective, and yet they care about education. Mm. Yet. You know, for instance, the quotes about Luther. Luther was crazily obsessed with overstatement. He makes statements just as pronounced.
Oh.
against the Pope.
Oh, yeah.
Against Anabaptists.
Oh, yeah.
Against those who would believe in baptism by immersion.
Oh, see, there's no question about that. But
I think, and yet Luther's whole life, his whole love was for a Jew. And the one who interpreted the meaning of that person's life and death was another Jew.
Well, see, this is why the Jews have a problem with Christianity. This is the contradiction that comes in. They don't have a problem with Jesus. They have a problem with his professed followers. That's the problem. You know, and here Luther supposedly loved the Jew, Jesus, and this and that, and then yet he made these statements. But again, it's not a matter of always being rational or being objective. There's a lot of sensitivity in anti-Semitism. Luther's works were used by the Nazis.
Just seems to me that if one has to take 85 careful steps in trying to convince the Jew about the fundamental teachings of Christianity or to get a fair hearing, that seems like a lot of work.
Well,
maybe it's necessary, but I just it seems to me that there's more to this whole Jewish psyche than just the criticisms that have been leveled against them and just the atrocities committed against them. There's something about what it means to be a Jew and what it feels like to be a Jew that makes it possible to even have those kinds of feelings when one is a generation removed or a family removed or whatever. You know, when I see a Jew, I don't see one whose ancestors crucified my Lord.
Yeah, well, of course not.
That's not the way I think of people individually. Jews don't do that as easily, it seems. And I agree that one has to kind of adopt that whole mindset to be able to...
Well, it's not as hard. I mean, I'm giving you the overall scope of things, and the main thing to leave here, you don't have to know all these different steps. The main thing I'm trying to show you is sensitivity. Be aware of what their sensitivities are. Try as least as you can to tread upon those sensitivities, and you'll find them open and receptive the way anybody else is. Look, some Gentiles are just as hard and just as closed to it. So, no, I know what you're saying, and I know some people get a little uptight to think, I've got to do all these things to try to witness to Jewish people, and, well, you just need to be a little bit educated as to their mindset and where they're coming from. But the main thing is tact and love and sensitivity. If I can get that across, and to everybody that wants to reach the Jews, then it'll be basically the same approach.
So are you suggesting then that there are a lot of Jews out there, you know, a decent minority anyway of Jews, who if they were to drop their prejudices against Christianity, that they really would agree with the fundamental principle of the New Testament, namely its identification of Jesus as being the Messiah?
Well, I think a lot of them even believe in Jesus already, but they haven't...
Messiah.
Oh, yeah. I think you've got a lot of them that they're not ready to make the break yet. And I can't blame them in many ways, because what are they going to go to? Well, you're going to go to some Sunday-keeping, pork-eating church, you know, that doesn't know anything about the state of it, or look at even Adventism. I mean, we're no great shakes. We might have the right theology, but, I mean, we're not the loving, caring church that God wants us to be. I believe one of the reasons that many Jews haven't come in yet, that the Lord hasn't brought many Jews in yet, is because we as a people are not ready for them. We'd insult them. I have been insulted and offended numerous times by people in this church. Fortunately, through the grace of God, I know this is the truth, and it isn't going to drive me out. But, so, I mean, even if a Jew... You know, I once read somewhere where a Jewish person said, wouldn't it be something if Jesus turned out to be the Messiah, but you Christians have kept us from him? And I think that says an awful lot. And again, it boils down, the Jews don't have a problem with Jesus per se, it's the church and those who profess followers of Jesus. They have ruined Jesus. They have presented the Jews with a false Christ for 1,500 years. Okay, go ahead.
Well, this is kind of a follow-up to his. I think that I can kind of empathize with you in your situation. My question is this. Being from a prior Catholic background,
sure.
which I was before I was a Seventh-day Adventist, I know that I was very sensitive. You see, I was a firm defender of the Catholic faith. I was a knight of the fourth degree, Knight of Columbus.
Boy.
And, you just get out the sword when anybody starts talking about the Catholic religion. And my sensibilities were very definitely, because every time that I would go into a certain church, which was an Adventist church with my wife, who was my fiance at the time, the pastor of that church seemed to have a little, he had two sermons, one for the regular people and one for when he saw me in the audience, see. And, I mean, there were many times that I was sitting there with my hands on the chair ready to get up and punch him out.
Well, this
so I know what you're
feel.
Saying. Yes, and I know what you're saying.
And
what I'm saying is he's talking about the sensibilities of the Jew and how sensitive you have to be. From my standpoint, I think you have to be just as sensitive with the Catholics because they're just as sensitive as the
Well,
Jews.
That's the point
because
with anybody.
Because we're telling them that the head of their church is wrong. The head of their church has been the one that's persecuted all the people. So it's the same kind of situation.
Yeah, well, that's it with anybody. You need to be careful of their sensitivity.
Right.
And what I was just trying to do at this meeting is pick out this specific group, the Jews, and show you where you have to be careful in this line. All right, anybody else have any questions at all? Okay, well, what I'd like to do as we close up, I want to read you a few more statements from Ellen White because I think they're very important. And understanding the work for the Jews. Now, what I'm reading you from here is there's a little booklet here called What Ellen G. White Says About the Work for the Jewish People. I don't know how many more of them are available at the GC. It's just like a statement, a compilation of her statements about the work for the Jews. Yeah, the White Estate might still have some. I don't know how many are still around. We've used up an awful lot of them in the past few years. But it's always worth dropping a line in or a letter, and I'm going to try when we send out these packets on this cassette series to get some of these, to put these in. Maybe all the packets will have them, I don't know. But anyway, I want to just read you a few statements here as we start to wind down. It's a few more minutes and I have something I want to read you and then a little something from the Bible. But alright, Ellen White, talking about the work for the Jews, she says the following. She says, okay, good. She says, the time has come when the Lord... Oh, I read this already. The time has come when the Jews are to be given the light. The Lord wants us to encourage and sustain men who shall labor in right lines for this people. For there will be a multitude convinced of the truth who will take their position with God. The time is coming when there will be as many converted in a day as there were on the day of Pentecost after the disciples received the Holy Spirit. Now, you were talking about mass amount of people coming in. I mean, from a human standpoint, yes, it looks very bleak. But on the same time, we've got God's prophet is saying as many in a day as on the day of Pentecost. Now, keep that in mind with another statement. She says here, there will be many converted from among the Jews, and these converts will aid in preparing the way of the Lord and making straight in the desert a highway for our God. Converted Jews are to have an important part to act in the great preparations to be made in the future to receive Christ our Prince. So the first statement we read is that as many in a day are going to be converted. And again, that's the buzzword of buzzwords, the word converted. Don't use that around your Jewish friends. Okay, and then the last quote I want to read here. There was a mighty work to be done in our world. The Lord has declared that the Gentiles shall be gathered in, and not the Gentiles only, but the Jews. There are among the Jews many who will be converted, and through whom we shall see the salvation of God go forth as a lamp that burneth. There are Jews everywhere, and to them the light of present truth is to be brought. There are among them many who will come to the light, and who shall proclaim the immutability of the law of God with wonderful power. The Lord will work. He will do wonderful things in righteousness. Now, look at this three basic ideas here. It says many Jews are going to be converted. Okay? I mean, 3,000 in a day, you just have a few days and you've got an awful lot. Okay? She said that they're going to have an important part to play in the preparations to receive Christ our Prince. And she says they're going to proclaim the immutability of the law of God with wonderful power. Now, what has the issue in the great controversy always centered around? God's law. This would begin in the beginning of even before the earth was created. Satan made accusations against God and His character, and it was by attacking God's law, he was attacking the lawgiver. If he says the law is unfair, he says and the lawgiver is unfair. And what is the issue going to climax around in the very last days? The law of God. It's going to climax. God's going to have a people who keep the commandments of God, though the whole world is arrayed against them. The final battle. Ellen White in Great Controversy said the whole Great Controversy, the battle has really been a battle over the law of God. Now, look at these statements. As many Jews are going to be converted in a day as Pentecost, they're going to proclaim the immutability of the law of God, which has been the battle all along. And I believe by all these Jews coming in, proclaiming the immutability of the law of God, I believe this could be how they are going to have that important part to act in the great preparations to be made to receive Christ our Prince. See the point I'm trying to make here? You're going to have many Jews on fire. They're going to proclaim the law of God with wonderful power. And then she said that they're going to have an important part to act. I believe this could be the way that they could have their role to play in getting this message out to the world. But first, we've got to get them first. We've got to be able to reach them first to give them what we have so they can give us some of what they've got. And together, if we're learning from each other, we can really help finish up this work. And keeping that in mind, I want to read you something right before I close. I'm not going to read it word for word because I don't have the time, but this is a story. This is one of the most moving stories I've ever heard. And I think it says, though, and I think it could help us understand how these Jews, when you get these Jews into this message, how firm they could be for truth. This is a story about in a Nazi concentration camp in Poland. And it was told by somebody who was there and who was watched. It was a Jewish prisoner. And he said that one morning they were standing there and they heard these terrible cries, the shrieking, like they never heard before. And someone said, it's a children's action. Little angels from the entire vicinity of... And he goes on and lists four or five Polish towns. Says, and others were brought there to meet their maker. In other words, they were killing children. In this action, it's called. And then these Jewish prisoners stood in line. They were being brought into the camp. And he says, suddenly just next to us, I heard the voice of a woman. Jews, have mercy upon me and give me a knife. In front of us was standing a woman, pale as a sheet. Only her eyes were burning with a strange fire. I thought that she had wanted to commit suicide. I looked around, and since I saw no Germans in sight, I said to her, why are you in such a rush to get to the world of truth? We will get there sooner or later. What difference does one day make? Dog, what did you say to that woman? A tall young German guard who appeared out of nowhere demanded an answer while swinging a rubber truncheon over my head. The woman asked for a knife, and I explained to her that as Jews we are not permitted to take our lives. And then he goes on, and then the German didn't respond to my words. He turned to the woman and demanded an explanation from her. She answered curtly, I asked for a knife. As she was talking, she kept examining the German with her feverish eyes. Suddenly her eyes stopped wandering. Her gaze was fixed on the top pocket of the German's uniform. The shape of a knife was clearly visible through the pocket. Give me that knife, she ordered in a commanding voice. The German, taken by surprise, handed the knife to the woman. She bent down and picked up something. Only then did I notice a bundle of rags on the ground near the sawdust. She unwrapped the bundle. Amidst the rags on a snow-white pillow was a newborn babe asleep. With a steady hand, she opened the pocket knife and circumcised the baby. In a clear, intense voice, she recited the blessing of circumcision. Blessed art thou, Lord our God, King of the universe, who has sanctified us by thy commandments and has commanded us to perform the circumcision. She straightened her back, looked up to the heavens and said, God of the universe, you have given me a healthy child. I am returning to you a wholesome kosher Jew. She walked over to the German, gave him back his blood-stained knife, and handed him her baby on his snow-white pillow. Imagine that, just circumcising the baby right before she knew it was going to be burned alive or crushed or whatever. And the thing that makes me think, just imagine that kind of dedication and that kind of fervency to God. Imagine if that fervency, if we had those kind of people with this message, this kind of dedication to God, if this woman, when her whole life was coming on, she was being ready to be killed any moment now and they were killing her baby, that in the midst of all this she would circumcise her child, offer the prayer for the circumcision, and then just hand the child over to be killed. Again, it's just, there's a fervency and a zeal for God that the Jews still have after all these years, even under all these conditions, that many of them still have kept. And so this makes me think of what we could do if they have the light that we have. And I'd like to close by reading Romans 11, starting at verse 11. I say then, have they stumbled that they should fall? Again, Paul's talking about the Jews. God forbid, but rather through their fall, salvation has come unto the Gentiles for to provoke them to jealousy. Now, if the falling of them be the riches of the world and the diminishing of them the riches of the Gentile, how much more their fullness? For I speak to you Gentiles inasmuch as I am the apostle of the Gentiles. I magnify my office. If by any means I may provoke to emulation they which are of my flesh, and might save some of them. For if the casting away of them be the reconciling of the world, what shall the receiving of them be but life from the dead? For if the first fruit be holy, the lump is also holy. And if the root be holy, so are the branches. And if some of the branches be broken off, this is the Jews, broken off, and now, being a wild olive tree, the Gentiles were the wild olive tree, thou were grafted in among them, and thou partakest with them of the root and fatness of the olive tree. Boast not against the branches, but if thou boast, thou bearest not the root, but the root thee. Thou wilt say then, the branches were broken off that I might be grafted in. Well, because of unbelief they were broken off, and thou standest by faith. Be not high-minded, but fear. For if God spared not the natural branches, take heed lest he also spare not thee. Behold, therefore, the goodness and severity of God. On them which fell, severity, but toward thee, goodness, if thou continue in his goodness, otherwise thou shalt be cut off. And they also, if they abide not still in unbelief, shall be grafted in, for God is able to graft them in again. For if thou were cut out of the olive tree, which is wild by nature, and were grafted contrary to nature into the good olive tree, how much more shall these, which be the natural branches, be grafted into their own olive tree? And I could think if there's any religion in the world which could be helped be symbolized by that, their own olive tree, it would have to be Seventh-day Adventism. Shall we pray? Father in heaven, again, I just thank you for the opportunity to speak these things and to try to teach some of our people about the natural olive branch. Many of them now are broken off, but Lord, how much better for these natural branches to be grafted back into the original tree. Lord, I pray that you will continue to work upon our hearts and open us up to the need to work for the Jews and to be sensitive for the need to work for the Jews. In the name of Jesus, I pray. Amen.
You have been listening to another special American Cassette Ministries presentation.
This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright American Cassette Ministries, all rights reserved. To order CDs or audio cassettes of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 1-800-233-4450. International calls, please dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americancassette.org. There you will discover the largest selection of genuine Adventist preaching available. American Cassette Ministries is not a one-man band. It's an orchestra of outstanding speakers who are all on the same theological page. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Cassette Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? Our email address is info@americancassette.org. We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and financial support are important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.